You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders. Have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Brad Flowers. Brad co-founded Bullhorn in 2008. A graduate of the University of North Texas, Brad's degree in literature serves him well in his strategy and language work during the branding process. It does not serve him well in his operational work, which is primarily informed by his rugged, real-world experience and self-taught MBA. He is also an avid cycler for commuting and for competition. He co-founded and currently serves on the board of the nonprofit community bike shop called Broke Spoke, spreading the good word. Brad, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be here.
We had this this joke beforehand with this Brad Brand thing that I'm trying to think if I've had other. I know other Brads but in the real world, but I'm not sure I've had... You might be the first Brad, and I only bring up what might seem like a rabbit hole of a conversation is because it took a few takes and almost created another one at the end when I said, thanks for being on brand, but I think I might have been a softer N than I was thinking. Thanks for being on Brad. Thanks for right. Brad, and regardless... Welcome.
Well, we do some naming over here. I could consider a name change.
I was going to say this is. See, we've kept these little raw moments in there because it segues us into some great conversation. So first, what does with an organization like a great name? What does Bullhorn do?
What Bullhorn? We call ourselves a branding company. Although I'm becoming a little less comfortable with that. Mainly what people hire us to do is help them talk about their brand, and then we bring their design on brand after that. And from there, we build out a brand manual, and often we'll go to design or make extensions for them, whether it's a t-shirt or a website, et cetera.
So that's interesting to me because... you know, we've had a few conversations about this here, and I think that when you create something called a brand manual, and especially in talking about, you know, your background of and you know how you start projects too, of beginning with the words first and then the visuals, which I think is such an important part because I think too many jump to pictures first.
Sure.
And when you talk about a brand manual or a style guide. I mean, I like that you called it a brand manual instead of a style guide because I think too often a style guide is what you get. So what goes in a brand manual beyond how much space we need to leave around the logo?
Sure. Well, you know, frankly, we change it all the time because we're always trying to figure out a better way to do it. And so where we are currently is we send over two different things. We send over a digital version, and the digital version has basically all the plug and play assets that they're going to need. Here's your Facebook avatar. Here's all of the different file formats and explained in a way that hopefully a more non-technical person can take it and find it actually useful. So that's more nuts and bolts. But we also do a printed copy, which has some of the more aspirational language. And it uses some of the photography that we use, the design elements, and it's definitely less technical. It tends to not, we started leaving out those specs because, you know, no one pays attention to them anyway. So, you know, how much room to leave. Don't turn it upside down or backwards, right, or put a drop shadow. You know, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. So we're trying to create something that's actually useful. And what we end up creating is more like a coffee table book. And, you know, our clients are finding it useful. They use it for to show to prospective clients. They use it to help onboard new employees. So that's kind of where we sit currently, although I'm sure that will change.
I love that approach of a coffee table book for your brand. I think more of us could use that out there for the situations that you mentioned, onboarding people. I mean, right. I'm kind of got lost in my mind of why are coffee table books impactful? Because they're, you know, we don't think about them a lot, but they're so important. They're so present. They're easy to pick up and thumb through. And I think it gets back to that other goal of this printed version that you talked about, and that was being aspirational as a brand. I think we spend all of this time to your point on what you shouldn't do, and it's like, well, what should you do?
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. What should you do? And you know, in the book, as you're flipping through, there are so many things like image style, image selection. What are the images? You know, it says so much about a company, and you know, it's these lines like brand culture that start to blur. And I think Tony Hsieh talks about them as different sides of the same coin, which is, I think, an interesting way to think about brand and culture is basically just two different ways of looking at what's ultimately the same thing.
That is, and that reminds me, speaking of brand books and brand and culture in their mind being the same thing, I saw him speak, I believe, when his book came out a few years ago, and he made this offer that if you requested it, they would send you a copy of the Zappos Culture book. So I have that over here, and it is not a coffee table book. It is more of a hardbound book kind of on the shelf. But
I haven't seen it.
Very visual still, but it's interesting, too. You talked about the digital version. Here's the stuff that you need, because we need that, too. But I think that it's interesting as someone that, you know, works in the digital realm. It brings a smile to my face that we sneak back to these printed artifacts for very valuable things. It almost seems like we've kind of flipped roles, that print was everything, and then we maybe had some digital accents, and now digital is everything. And it seems like these very specific, high-impact touch points that having a physical printed artifact is important.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. And I'm really excited about the way things are going in that space. I think it's sort of, you know, it's really kind of reverting back to when printed things were really special, and there weren't all that many of them, and there were items that were more treasured and sought after, and maybe more exclusive in some ways. So I think, you know, hopefully over here we're interested in printing less stuff that people just throw away, and print, you know, making things that people actually want to have.
Well, it's interesting because there are these kind of totems that have value. I mean, I'm just scanning my desk. I've got an aviation client, and pilots share these coins that they call RMOs, round metal objects. I've got that. I've got, you know, a little lapel pin that I was given at the Nobel Museum in Stockholm. I've got a little coin from Disneyland's 60th anniversary from when we were there with our kids. And it's like all of that's what all of these things are. And I think, you know, all of the other stuff, of course, it's hugely important. It's where people are interacting constantly. But I think, you know, if you can take something home and if you can touch it, I think that's a very real connection to these brands, that if we are digital only sometimes, we miss out on that connection.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think it's one way of thinking about how like online education differs from, you know, real world education. And there's something about the tactile experience of being in a room and knowing what it sounds and feels and smells like, and these all these different inputs that embed and create memories in your brain that actually in some ways makes it more valuable information, or at least more durable information.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you hit on more valuable, again, the kind of high impact, but there's something too about the word durability with that it's creating a stronger connection that I don't know if I'd have it. There's so much in the digital marketplace kind of passing by fast, that if you look for what we have outside of that world, it is these little things. So I think books are huge. I love that idea of a coffee table book for your brand. It's interesting, your discussion about, as I asked kind of what you do at Bullhorn, and you said, well, it's kind of, you know, how most people are coming to us. And it reminds me of this ongoing theme that I feel like we have here. And as a wordsmith, I'm excited to get your take on it. For as much as we help others with words, I feel like sometimes the conceptions, the preconceived notions around the words in our business aren't always that great. I mean, I love, you know, branding's probably the subset I spend the most time in, but marketing and advertising and communications and all of these kind of different things that sort of mean the same thing, but different things. And I like that you went straight to, here's why people come to us. Because ultimately, for all of our best intentions on what we're thinking when we hang that shingle out, it's kind of like, because, you know, with running a similar business, what do people need help with? I think that's what we end up doing. And in spite of ourselves, with our wonderful vocabulary sometimes.
Yeah, I think one of the things that brings to mind, a few guests back, you had a guy on that talked about branding is kind of like molding fog or forming fog or something like that.
Yeah, Patrick Hanlon.
Yeah, and I think that struck me as something that's pretty true. I think that's why we're becoming less comfortable calling ourselves a branding company, because branding is complicated and actually quite difficult to define when you sit down to do it, that it opens the space for a lot of confusion. And, you know, people call themselves branding companies when actually mainly they do advertising, or they call themselves a branding company when really they are a website build shop or PR or whatever. So I think from the consumer end, it seems to me that there's a little bit of confusion because we can't come to some agreeable definitions. And so there's a lot of overlap and misunderstanding. So what do you actually do? Are you really an ad company, or are you a graphic design shop, or, I think that that's part of it. It's like, you know, like we were talking about culture a few minutes ago, it's, you know, culture is a word. If you sit down in a room with 10 other people, none of those 10 people would give the same definition of what is culture. You know, it's really quite hard to define, even though we use the words really easily and fluently. You know, getting someone to define branding, unless they thought quite a bit about it, or what is a brand, is actually pretty difficult. And it's easy to account for the things the company does, but the brand kind of lives in that interplay between company and consumer, and that makes it messy.
Yeah, well, it does. And it's interesting because, as especially practitioners in this field, we kind of know our outputs. And I think that's why, you know, we can make you a logo, we can build you a website. And oftentimes the client is stuck in those, in that kind of checklist mode also. And you get back to kind of the bigger definitions, like you're talking about, like the Tony Hsieh interplay of brand and culture. And it's like, I think, too, in our specific industry, To be frank, that stuff is harder to sell.
I like
that definition, but how do I make a thing that I can help you with that? And I think that that's a lot of times where the real power can be is if you can. I mean, back to, I feel like I'm connecting all the dots of the conversation, but back to the coffee table book. If you've got,
right.
if you help them distill who they are, because they often know who they are, if you help them distill that into something that is easily scannable and someone can pick it up, look through a few pictures and words and say, oh yeah, I get it. It sounds simple, but nobody does it.
They don't. And I was just thinking, as you said that, the idea of what you do that helps businesses and then what you can sell and how, you know, it's really interesting, the disparity there. If you, I can just imagine going through a brand exercise with a client and getting to the end, you've had this discovery, all these conversations, you know, all this about the company. And then, you know, if you're final advice is, you know, I think the best thing you could do as a company is be a little nicer when you answer the phone. And it's, you know, that that's just so underwhelming. Like, and, but even that may be the most important brand touch point for them, but that's a tough one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and as anybody that's, you know, in our external, you know, marketing firm agency role, you know, you look at that and, I always say answering the phone is a great example because, you know, whatever we do, whatever campaign we launch, say it leads back to a phone call. If that doesn't go well, then that undoes the whole thing.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
So are there other beyond, you know, thinking of the role of culture and of who's answering the phone, of getting the brand out of the hands of, you know, just, you know, the agency that helps put it together and the marketing team that ordered it, because it really has to have a life in the organization. Is there any magic to getting that baton handoff right?
I think it probably varies quite a bit. We, depending on the size of organization primarily that you work with, we work with a lot of small to medium-sized companies who, which is nice because we often get direct access to primary decision makers, often owners, partners, founders. And I, you know, one of the things we found is it's really a process issue that if we can include as many people in the process on the front end, we want to talk to kind of everybody. And then, as we go through, we kind of go through this exploratory phase. Then we look at research and strategy, and we want to talk to kind of fewer people. Then when it comes to talking through concepts, whether it's language, visual concepts, whatever, we want to have a pretty small group. But that process is essential because when it comes to rollout, there's already this really leaned in group of people who are excited and feel like, you know, I think it works two ways. Talking to them actually makes the product better, but also talking to them builds this like excitement and kind of energizing atmosphere within the organization. So when it comes to rollout and we hand the baton off, there are lots of people within the organization who are ready to kind of take it and run with it. You know, now the trouble is oftentimes these companies don't have marketing directors or designers. And so inevitably down the track, we see things that we're not really super excited about. But
I think I love that. I mean, those are some good ingredients that you just listed off process-wise of involving many people up front.
Right.
And kind of just hearing from all different types of areas. And I think the brand stuff, It is a big thing. It should have stakes that go with it, but I think that sometimes that ends, what you end up with is very controlled. We have to be careful. We have to be careful about like opening this up and getting under the hood because we're going to hear all this stuff. And I think you start like you said, big, and then focusing that group. And then, like you said, it does two things because it narrows your work. You have a really invested smaller group over time. But yep. If you've done your job right, you've heard important things early on from the masses.
Absolutely. And then
hopefully some of those, if not directly, at least are somewhat carried over in what you're actually delivering as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah.
So I love that, you know, you talk about, you know, kind of your work in language work on the mm-hmm. word side of things. And I think, you know, on one hand, it's easy, as we were alluding to earlier, to stereotype with the visual. We're in branding, so you're going to design us a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So there's that. And then it's like, no, it's words. Okay, so it's it's our name and maybe slogan or whatever sits under the logo. So is there a broader view of language and language frameworks that brands need to understand?
Yes, they probably do. I think one thing they need to understand is there's not really a one size fits all solution. And partly that has to do with organization size, but then just the evolution of the organization. You know, the name is obviously really important. It doesn't have to say everything, but it's probably at least needs to not be misleading. Hopefully over time you can become ubiquitous enough to where you don't need a tagline or something that's attached to the logo. And I think what we see more and more, and I seem to be having this conversation a lot with clients, is the opportunity for people to engage at different depths. There are always going to be a lot of folks who just kind of want to hit the headlines and kind of bounce off the surface of the pond. But for every person that is like that, and you say people now just want to engage on a superficial level, there's a second person who's going to want to go, you know, as deep and as niche as possible. And so I think when you think about your language sets, is providing opportunities for people to be able to quickly digest stuff, but then for people who really want to know your expertise to be able to go as deep as possible, that seems to be pretty important.
Yeah, it's kind of like that the adage of having your story accessible for skimmers, swimmers, and divers. So you've
got, oh, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, and I think another aspect to that is the people want to do business with people, not organizations and not companies. So I guess if there's another broad generalization, it's that allow people to write like people, and it doesn't have to sound like a monolithic whole. Give the opportunity for multiple voices to kind of sound in for the brand.
I think that's a real good point. And it's funny because it seems like we've still, as much as we say there's no B2B or B2C, it's all business to person. It's like we kind of toss mm-hmm. out these platitudes, but then we still sit down and go back to writing like robots.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Allow your own voice and don't be afraid to let, you trust the people that work with you and for you to do all sorts of really important tasks. You can trust them to also write and sound like themselves. And because it gets back to the same thing. Like if your brand and culture are similar concepts, your culture is kind of the culmination of the personality of the group. And so your brand should also sound like the culmination of the personalities of the group. You should have a brand language that doesn't sound like a machine language, but sounds like a group of people talking, having a conversation.
So in thinking about that, is there a way that you, talking about that culmination of mm-hmm. language and voice, but also not sounding like a robot, but also to communicate what that is internally, is there a map for doing that? Is there a reference point? Is that something that you would put in a in a physical brand manual. How do you manage that without doing the robot thing? Because I think that's where we give these steps that end up as paint by number, and then you end up with robots instead of people. But is there, or I'm talking in circles, yeah. But is there a way to be consistent within that, or to communicate what it is that we're kind of trying to go for as a brand in a way that leaves room for interpretation?
Yeah, I think one of the hard things you're kind of talking around is that it's
certainly talking around it. So
it's great to say, you know, your brand should sound like a chorus of people or whatever. But the truth of the matter is there's sometime there'll need to be like the brand master voice or whatever, you know, whether it's on a social media post or maybe some more general post on a site or something. You need there needs to be kind of like what is the brand, the bigger, we call it bullhorn master voice here. And again, that's like thinking through how to do that for companies it works a little differently with different companies. We have one client who, their space, the language tends towards like really hyperbolic BS mainly with a lot of their competitors. And, or on the other hand, it goes like super technical. And so they're going to sell a lot of stuff online. And so what we help them with is we develop their kind of like a brand totem. We found this funny old picture of Paul Newman playing ping pong.
We will be embedding this in the post.
It's an amazing photo. And so our advice was, okay, you know, you're getting ready to make an Instagram post, you're writing the caption, and you have everything's capitalized and there are exclamation points. Just pause, delete that, look at the picture. You know, how would Paul Newman say it? So he's kind of like their voice totem. And I think we've had some luck with that. But again, it's like how that becomes, it's not so much how it happens. It's just that you take the time to make it happen, giving the space for multiple people to talk, and then also thinking through how you maintain consistency in the overall brand language.
Yeah,
because it's hard. It's similar. We talk about, you know, flexibility and scalability and dynamism in logo and logo sets. And that's kind of a complicated thing for visual language, but it's really the same thing for the way we talk too. You have to talk, and different people have to talk in so many different places that it's hard. I think that's why people struggle with it, because it's just actually legitimately a difficult thing to do.
Well, and I like what you captured there of being organizationally dependent on, back to culture, but at one that tends to the formal, and if there's a lot of industry jargon, then I think kind of correcting the other way with something that is a little more from the creative side of the brain and look at this and think. Versus, you know, I could see the inverse of that working. If you've got a company that's all over the place internally, it might help to make them an old-fashioned list of, you need to follow these 4 points, or something very, very focused, very formal there.
Exactly. Yeah, here's the hashtag you should use, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Some of what you would traditionally think of with a guide there. Well, Brad, as we start to wrap up here, it is time to ask for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was there was a book on the New York Times bestseller list, maybe a year or two ago about tidying up. I think it was called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
Yes, yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
It does.
And one of... So that's not my thing, but that's the backstory to the thing. One of her points was, you should pick up the objects in your life, and if they give you joy, you know, those are things you want to hang on to. Which at the time I thought, man, this is really silly. Like, you know, I my blender's really useful, but I wouldn't say it gives me joy. But so a couple of weeks ago, I went to put on, you know, it was like we've had this all this crazy weather and it was warm for several days in a row. And then it got cold again. And I put on this Patagonia fleece and I paused for a moment. I was like, this thing like legitimately gives me joy. I love this thing. It feels great. It's the right weight. I like how I look. I like the brand. And while it's, you know, it's a common, you know, it's a little bit trite, I guess, to say Patagonia, but, I think one, I like this particular thing. And the second thing is I like how they give themselves room to screw up a lot of times and admit that they're not perfect and then give it another go. And I think that's something that as a person, I really resonate with because I've certainly screwed up a lot of things and I appreciate second chances.
All of that is not only a great brand that makes you smile, but is all of the branding stuff in a nutshell. It is a company, an organization that stands for something that you identify with, that you want to be a part of those same traits as well, and it makes you happy. I can't think of a better description, so well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Brad, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
The best is the bullhorncreative.com. There you can send us a note and we'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes, where we may also include the photo of Paul Newman playing ping pong. Brad,
that's great.
Thanks for joining us on Brand.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Alex Mastriani gave us a shout on Twitter for our episode featuring Marcus Sheridan. Thanks for listening, Alex. And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a branding question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Hey, speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to OnBrandPodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.